Hello, everybody, and welcome to Buck Wild, the bonus miniseries from the Buck Starts Here, where we take one last cannonball into the powdered wig pool that is the Revolutionary Era. I'm Kyle, joined by Eric Mason, my credentialed and very opinionated co-host, and we are tying up the loose ends in Eric's notebook. These are all the bits that didn't make the main march to the founding generation, the duels, diseases, drama, and downright unhinged decisions that helped shape the early republic. Oh, we got a few more muskets to fire here, myths to explode, and whiskey-fueled rebellions to stir up. So grab your tricorn hat and your historical grievances, and let's get buck wild.
I'm very, very excited for these episodes. Kyle, correct me if I word this wrong, but this is like the things we get to cover in the first six presidents.
Yeah. You've done so much work putting like some really detailed notes together. It feels like a shame and we don't get to cover every point on there.
When we have to cut stuff down, and Kyle has to stop me from, you know, lengthy diatribes on stuff, what ends up happening is we get, you know, Kyle does his job being the host and actually gets us to the end of the story. I suppose I would still be talking about George Washington. Like, I would still be on George Washington, probably still the first episode if I was allowed to just keep going. It creates some sort of consumable item.
So, but that would land differently if we weren't actually talking about George Washington this episode?
Oh, yeah, that does. God, that's good. But we decided to reopen the books and go back and see what we screwed up, you know, what stuff that was framed wrong. And I think that's important too. But also like the side stories of little weird things that we picked up on that like maybe don't have a long narrative that can be stretched and tied back into the president. So I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to take the first six, you know, the things we missed with the first six, and we're just going to run through there. So Kyle, are you ready? Are you ready to go on this journey of insanity that I've been going on redrafting this?
I've been following your notes. Yes, I'm excited.
I want to point out real quick, it's Kyle's background.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Looks fantastic. Yeah. But Kyle, I like you got the globe, you got the timer, but most importantly, you got your medals, you got your ribbons from your time in the Navy. So what are those?
I knew you were going to ask this question.
Of course it was.
So it needs to get redone. Those are just the ones that I happen to have. My wife turned it into a nice little shadow board, but it's just a Navy Achievement Medal, Good Conduct Medal, and then I think that's the National Defense Ribbon down there, but I should have a Battle E. I should have a Marksman pistol. And that should be an expert, actually. Sharpshooter or expert.
I love that.
And then there's one other one. Oh, the Global War on Terrorism. So, yeah, I should have two full bars, but I never had reason to get the actual medals because I never had a reason to wear, like, the dress uniforms on the submarine.
So, if it's okay with you, talking about military careers, I'd like to jump into who I think is one of the most influential military leaders in early American history. And it's not George Washington. It's his brother,
Andrew
Lawrence. I'm like literally upset with you for how perfect that was. That is, I will not be able to compete with that. So many things about George Washington really set the stage for the country. And not just formally, like Washington didn't have a role in the Declaration of Independence. He didn't have a role in Articles of Confederation. He didn't really have a role in the U.S. Constitution. He viewed himself as a Cincinnatus type, a man called to serve for his people. His actions, what he did, even being referred to as Mr. President, really set the stage, serving two terms. I mean, really, there's only one other president who served more than two terms. But his brother Lawrence is really who was the role model for Washington. Now, one thing we talked about is George Washington's dad died really, really young, which is unfortunately a common trait with a lot of our founding fathers. Lawrence Washington he's technically George Washington's stepbrother. It's important to remember this is during Washington's formative years. And he looked up his brother. He thought his brother was like the most amazing person in the world. His brother was commissioned as a captain in the British colonial forces during the War of Jenkins' Air. We should do a short on the War of Jenkins' Air. And he served on...
Go back to Lawrence just real quick. Was he similar in stature to Washington? Was he also a massive beast of a man? You said he's stepbrothers, so maybe they weren't blood related.
So he was...
Or were they half...
It's not... unfortunately, they didn't have like combine stats on him because he died.
Right.
He died young. He died, I believe, in 1751. So he died he died like in his mid-30s from tuberculosis. But if you look at paintings of him, like he looked like a big guy, but
Yeah.
As Ray has taught us, you know, you're basically paying for Photoshop.
Right.
Or you're paying never to get your portrait if you hire Gilbert Stuart.
Everybody else did.
When you talk about major things under with Lawrence Washington, so one, he was the reason George Washington wanted to become a British officer.
Right.
And Washington becoming a British officer and then be falling out with the British and then becoming this great general that was that led the Continental Army, is he would have never started on that road. He probably would have just been Southern gentry who would have lived a comfortable life, but a man of incredibly strong ethics and a man who also was like, believed he was destined to be this great military leader, and then to have that yanked away from him by the British because he was an aristocrat, and suddenly you're just left with this like man, this cult of personality almost, you could argue, from Washington, that people wanted to follow. I don't know if they stick around in the winter in Valley Forge if it's not for Washington's leadership, for that cult of personality.
I think you can't discount the role that a strong leader can play in getting the extra mile out of people.
Yeah. And it really is impressive. But this track's all started because of Lawrence Washington. Now, I mentioned before Lawrence died of tuberculosis when he was young, even for that time. He ends up with tuberculosis, and the only time George Washington, I thought this was a great random trivia question. George Washington only left the country once. Where did he go?
Canada?
No. as I can see Kyle in the notes. I
mean, it should be England, you would think.
Yeah, I think it would be England. I think it would be Canada. Barbados.
Oh, so he didn't even go steal a piece of the barge chair?
No, that was a great trivia question. I do like that. But yeah, so he went to Barbados because he went with Lawrence to help soothe his lungs, you know, in that warmer, more tropical, humid air.
They've been doing that since then. That was a big thing during like the West. Like, they sent people out west to the desert for tuberculosis.
Yeah, I mean, I believe there's even places in Spain and Portugal that did that during the 1600s, which bothers the question, why does anybody live in the Northeast? Like, it's just...
Tuberculosis still exists, too, which is another crazy thing.
Yeah, we've forgotten. There's some crazy stories about tuberculosis, like its discovery and stuff.
So my question about this then, if he was down there at, what time frame was this?
It's like the 1750s, early 1750s.
How far was Barbados into the dark history of its...
deep. Deep. Okay.
Did that have any effect on him, or is that ever mentioned?
No, we don't really have any writings on how it affected him. But no, this is Barbados is well into chain slavery at this time.
Yeah.
I mean, it imported the same amount of slaves, little Barbados, as all of the U.S., and it was horrific. And this isn't task slavery, kind of what you think of when you think of pre-antebellum slavery. Pre-antebellum. I'm talking like the period before the Civil War.
The antebellum era is what we're going into. So yeah. Before that.
So we're in the period before that. So this is brutalist chain slavery. Like, this is horrific. This is about as bad as you could possibly think it is. So Lawrence goes down there, and he ends up, he ends up feeling a little better. So 1751, he goes down there, and he dies about a year later at age 34. But what I think is interesting is while Washington's down there, he contracts smallpox.
And really?
Yes. So he gets really sick. He survives, and he I don't want to say writes, because like a lot of times, like you'll see in history books. George Washington wrote about something, and he did write about stuff, but a lot of times those are sources from like the 1780s, 1790s, almost kind of being like memoirs,
yeah,
by proxy. And I just want to be clear with that. There's a lot of good
it's less he wrote it, more like somebody was in a parlor when he told the story about this, and they're recounting secondhand information.
Yeah,
it's not a primary source, and that's kind of your big deal, right? Most of the information I think we use in this show is primary sources.
Yeah, I would say the vast majority. A lot of Smithsonian sources, too. There's all Library of Congress stuff, but Library of Congress is mostly direct records, so it gets a little weird there. So Washington gets smallpox, and he actually develops, like you do if you get smallpox and survive, a lifelong immunity to it. Mm-hmm. And he was instrumental in forcing his troops to be inoculated against, and we talked about that a couple
of times. Abby.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So he... he ends up having his troops inoculated against smallpox, and it ends up being a huge advantage. Which that would have never happened if Lawrence Washington never, you know, took his brother to Barbados with him. His brother went with him, I think, to honestly help him out, because he was he's 14 months from passing away at that point.
Do you think that Washington would have trusted Abigail and the inoculation efforts that she was doing before, if he hadn't have been immune to it, I guess?
I don't know. But isn't that a cool, like, what if in history?
That's a really weird what if. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that can hinge on that.
So you end up with two presidents, who the first two presidents being these super pro inoculation and vaccination, pro vaccination presidents. That in large part you had one you could argue was the civil mind of the United States, John Quincy Adams, one who's the military mind.
Can we highlight that just real quick? That the founding fathers were pro vaccination.
Yeah, they were. Very, very clearly were. There's no ambiguity there. Enforced inoculation too. But yeah, he was it is very funny that these like little tinges in history end up having these huge effects. You know, him looking up to his brother who's a captain, ends up him being posthumously get named like a 5-star general or a 6-star? I think he was general of the army or something like that.
Who, Washington or Lawrence? Yeah.
Washington.
Yeah, I don't know.
George Washington and John J. Pershing are the only two. It's a non-official term, but a 6-star general is general of the armies of the United States. It's only been bestowed upon George Washington and John J. Pershing. Though interesting, that same title, Ulysses S. Grant got in 2022.
So it sounds to me like a field marshal. It's the general in charge of the generals.
Why do we not have field marshals in the U.S.?
Because the British, we didn't want to be like them.
I'm going to be so smug on this because the first one was going to be General Marshall, and they didn't want Field Marshal Marshall.
That's amazing. I love that.
General Marshall is a fascinating human being. Just literally is a huge reason why the world, at least Western Europe, was freed that entire time. But it's these little tinges, these little reverberations throughout history of these small little decisions and these small little life experiences that lead these powerful people to making powerful decisions. And who would have thought, like, oh, why was George Washington such a great advocate for inoculation among his troops when people really didn't understand the science at the time? And he was like, because I got smallpox. I know what that felt like. So, yeah, I think Lawrence Washington probably had one of those outsized impact. For somebody who, in early American history, for somebody who died, 20 years before the revolution even started. Some other ones. I was really curious about. So his wooden teeth, right?
Yeah, I've heard a ton about that. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I had this like weird epiphany when I was going through my notes, and I'm like, where did that come from? Like, I like finding little tall tales and things we learned in school will be like, we've got to figure that out. So I was like, dude, I fell down the rabbit hole of this. I was just like, I got to figure this out. And best I can tell, and this other people have written on this, so I just want to be clear, like, this isn't like Eric's unique theory, is it was made as a joke from people who were around him, kind of like making fun of him. And I think the reason that kind of fell out of the ethos was because the idea of making fun of George Washington is an insane idea to, I think, the best right Americans. And, but you got to, like, people think he won all the Electoral College votes.
No.
It's like, no, he didn't come close to winning. He was not close to unanimously elected. People say, oh, his teeth are made of wood because they were so poorly maintained because they're made of ivory, so they started browning.
See, now that sounds more believable to me. I think that's actually hilarious, too.
So they called him wooden teeth. And I love the idea of these people just like kind of making fun of George Washington, and it eventually just becomes like something we taught like little kids that George Washington had wooden teeth. And it's really just like some dudes probably like up in heaven being like, wow, dude, I just made that up to be like funny. And now it's getting taught to children.
Just imagine trying to study a spider from fossil records. That's kind of what you're doing with history sometimes.
I don't like spiders freak me out.
I know that's a terrible analogy. That's why
it is, but it is. No, it's a great analogy. What are you talking about, Kyle? That's an excellent analogy. It's exactly what it is because we can't see the tapestry around it.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I think that's funny that we're like, oh, he had wooden teeth. And the idea of like making fun of George Washington became so foreign to people that they were like, no, he must actually have wooden teeth.
That's awesome.
So two other ones that I found interesting, but there's no real backstory to them. The cherry tree story.
Yes, yes.
It was made up of this guy, Mason Weems. And he wrote like kind of like a memoir. I think of like, I don't know, almost like a memoir autobiography in 1806 and was like, guys, I made that up.
Right.
And he was very open about making it up. And everybody was like, nah, it's a good story. And he's like, okay, but I made it up. And they were like, no, you were good. No, you didn't. He's like, oh, okay.
Do you remember painting the tree?
Oh, yes.
The tree red so that way George Washington would go chop it down.
I have a weird memory of being in like first grade and we actually had to like color in a picture of George Washington like chopping down the cherry tree. And all I remember is that he was a little kid, but he was dressed in like full
like pilgrim gear.
Yeah, like he had like the suit with the ruffle and I was just like, huh, that's weird. It's like it'd be a weird thing to be cutting down a tree with. But finally the last like weird George Washington thing, and we go on and on with Mr. Washington. Do you know he pardoned the guys from the Whiskey Rebellion?
I saw that in your notes, and I meant to ask you about that. That's wild, right?
That's wild, right? It was the first American rebellion. This dude was like, I mean, maybe you could argue Shay's rebellion, if depending on context, but like the Whiskey Rebellion. He leads these troops, and then he captures everybody. Everybody goes home, and the two leaders are like, oh, they're like, they could get executed. I think they were supposed to get executed. And he was like, no, we're going to pardon you. He goes, I want to show that I'm tough with this national unity, but like, I understand. I'm just like, what a man. Some people love this dude.
I think they got lucky that he had just fought the British, because you could have caught him before the British fight, and he might have been a little more bloodthirsty.
But I get why. Listen, Kyle, you know me. I obviously went in with a very heavy, as unbiased as I try and be. I have to say, I like the facts to be unbiased, but we're obviously going to be like Andrew Jackson. Like, we're going to be like,
yeah,
no, he did a bunch of crappy things. I like went into Washington being like, all right, I'm going to have like the mask torn off. And no, I didn't feel that way at all. I'm like, oh no, everything he did was, I honestly like him a lot more. And I was already like maxed out on my George Washington meter.
Yeah.
And I liked him a lot, but yeah, his argument for pardoning the Whiskey Rebellion leaders was he thought he had showed force. Like, mm-hmm. You totally did. You led an army.
Yeah.
You stopped a rebellion. He was like, there's no need for this. There's no need. He didn't view them as traitors to the United States or anti-American. He was like, they're whiskey. They're whiskey farmers who are upset at attacks. He got it. And I'm like, this is why people loved you. Because you somehow satisfied the nationalists who were like, we need unity. We need a strong federal government. But also the anti-federalists who were like, oh, government didn't overreact. They did. They behaved appropriately.
Right.
I like this guy. I can see why he's on Mount Rushmore.
I love that the stories actually match the legacy too.
Oh yeah, it's right? Weird when you read him over and over and over again, because you're just like, oh, there's mythicization of him, don't get me wrong, but man, it's not that far off. And that's crazy, because it is he's mythicized to a degree that I don't know if there's any American politicians ever mythicized that much. But for him to kind of live up to it and what he's done, I love it.
That's it for this dispatch from Loose Ends, Buckwild, our final salute to the revolutionary weirdness that built the country. Now, we may have signed off on the main episodes, but history's never tidy, and the Founding Fathers left behind more loose threads than ratified documents. So thank you for joining us as we tie up these last knots. Stick around. We've got more eras, more chaos, and plenty more bucks to chase. Until then, stay rebellious, stay relentless, and stay buck wild. Produced by China Shop Productions.